So I work on understanding how the microenvironment regulates tumor cell quiescence in distant organs.
You have some great ideas. In fact, your presentation was really stunning. So you were showing that niches are very important for cancer cells to lie dormant in.
Right. You know, the phenomenon of dormancy on the cellular level has been appreciated for many years now, but there hasn't been a real definition of what the microenvironment is when a cancer cell travels from their primary organ to a secondary site and lies there and doesn't divide for, you know, X amount of time. What is maintaining it in that dormant state? So, you know, there's evidence that in patients that there can be decades between, you know, dissemination and regrowth, but there's no real knowledge about what keeps them in that state. And so to answer that, we use mouse models and zebrafish models, and also models of human cells that we've engineered so that the cells are all recapitulating their in vivo functions. And with all those models, we're able to show that the cells are residing on blood vessels, on the basal side of blood vessels, so not where the blood flow is, but on the other side. And that the factors being expressed by the endothelial cells, which are composing that microvasculature, are actually inducing the tumor cells into a quiescent state.
And to do that, you had to grow your own blood vessels.
Yes, exactly. So we, you know, we're not mice and we're not zebrafish, so I think it's really important that we create models of human cells where we're able to recapitulate the in vivo functions of these cells, but we're also able to reduce our variables down. You know, so if you want to show that endothelium is restricting tumor growth, you need a condition where tumors are growing, and that only by adding endothelium you're going to be able to judge an effect, whether it's a pro or a con or null. And so that's what we were able to do. We took cells from the stroma of these organs, meaning that they're non-epithelial, non-endothelial, they're the other like resident cell types. And we laid those down. So from the lung, we took lung fibroblasts. From the bone marrow, we took mesenchymal stem cells. And when you see the tumor cells just on those, they outgrow rampantly. But if we see the stromal cells and endothelial cells, the endothelial cells self-organize into little microvessels that recapitulate a lot of their in vivo functions. And now when you see the tumor cells on, you see them restrained, and then eventually they become quiescent. And then more importantly, they stay quiescent.
So that's the much more natural environment.
It is, exactly. And you're showing this function that you see in humans with human cells, and thus you can hopefully assume that the molecules that you're going to discover that are mediating this and some of the behaviors you see are more more accurate as far as human physiology is concerned as a result.
So you showed then some very interesting time-lapse film, I think over a period of maybe, was it 72 hours?
Exactly, yeah, 3 days.
You showed how tumor cells are much more likely to divide if they're near the tip of a dividing blood vessel rather than the stem. Explain that concept to me.
Right, so there's the idea that the mature microvasculature is secreting molecules as a result of being mature that are then inducing the cells into a quiescent state. So all vessels in our body, whether they're epithelium, you know, the ducts and the mammary gland that can carry milk, or even our endothelium, which are the vessels in our body that carry blood, need to know which way is up and which way is down. One way they know which way is down is because they secrete a basement membrane, and that's on the basal side of the vessel. This is like an extracellular matrix of proteins and sugars that not only serve as scaffolding, but also have function. That function is a signaling function, and there are molecules within that basement membrane that are telling the tumor cell to calm down and go into a quiescent state, to hibernate, essentially. When a vessel starts remodeling, they lose that basement membrane. And it's not just that tumor cell. So by doing time-lapse, you know, imaging, we were able to show that that the tip cells, where you don't have that stable basement membrane, aren't just permitting growth, but they're actually accelerating it. And so we were able to look through a variety of approaches and show that these tip cells are actually secreting molecules that turn out to also be pro-tumor. So essentially you have a dormant niche by stable microvasculature, and then you have a micrometastatic niche by neovasculature, or these endothelial tip cells.
It was a very clever experiment. What made you think of doing it?
I have a pretty, you know, good history with vascular biology, and I was suspicious that this behavior was happening, you know, based on in the experiments and the kind of mid to high throughput approach we were taking, and we have a lot of different niches within our experiments, and it's just looking a little bit more carefully at the behaviors rather than treating the system as one system as a whole, actually looking at it as a bunch of subsystems, and much like our bodies are and our tissues are.
could that ever have any implications for treatment if, for instance, you needed growing tips of blood vessels nearby tumor cells? I mean, if there were areas where you suspected there were tumor cells, could you stop the blood vessels growing?
Yeah, and you know, this has been an approach that's been taken with established tumors. You know, the idea of anti-angiogenesis, which was put forth by Judah Folkman in the early 1970s and has led to therapies like Avastin and a lot of other ones that are in the FDA pipeline. The context shifts, though, when you talk about disseminated tumor cells in secondary microenvironments. You've already treated the patient. Hopefully, let's say you've removed the tumor, and now you have these cells, and we don't really know if they're going to be the ones that are causing the metastatic growth that could eventually kill the patient or not. Is there a way to treat patients with low levels of some anti-angiogenic molecule that would prevent tip cell formation? That may be viable. That may be like a long-term therapy you could give a patient that would prevent their tumor from ever being sparked to grow by these tips. These tips are essentially sparks that get cells going out of dormancy. The other potential therapeutic that could result out of this is understanding what are the biochemical and physical factors that are maintaining dormancy around the stable microvasculature and seeing if we can somehow supplement those to patients in order to keep their cells dormant.
Now, looking at your experiments, it seems so clear-cut that using a 3D medium for growth is just the way to go. It strikes me that a lot of experiments done on the 2D flat surfaces are pretty much useless.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go as far to say that they're useless. I think that we learned a lot about cell culture from putting things on plastic. I mean, just the fact that we could take cells out of our body and maintain them, is a huge advance in and of itself. As far as recapitulating function, we're three-dimensional organisms, and thus, you know, form follows function follows form. So you have to take the right form in order to look at function, and that form is three-dimensional, and thus the functions derived from that.
And as you say, as you said earlier, cells behave very differently on a two-dimensional surface, and they grow much more than they do in the natural three-dimensional surface.
Yeah, it's striking to me that, you know, when you look at in vivo growth rates of tumors, they're not nearly the 24-hour doubling time you typically see with a cancer cell on plastic. In the three-dimensional models, we're able to not quite necessarily recapitulate the growth pattern in vivo, but we get a lot closer to it, and especially when it comes to quiescence. I mean, achieving quiescence on plastic without contact inhibition of a completely confluent monolayer, I haven't really seen good examples of that before. In 3D, there are many good examples of that.
What have you got out of this meeting?
A lot. I think it's been a fascinating meeting in terms of mixing together clinician scientists who actually deal with patients and want to know, is dormancy something that they really need to worry about, or do these cells that may be dormant in patients never actually result in the metastasis that kills the patient, as well as the fundamental scientists and the mathematicians who are trying to model this process. So I think there's a lot of disparate data and some possibly or potentially opposing conclusions that can be made from the patient data and the data in mice and the data in these human cultures, and trying to reconcile them is I think one of the biggest keys. And I think that the discussion definitely got going at this meeting, and a lot of points were raised that hopefully now, as we all leave, it's little subgroups that have been talking during this meeting can continue to work together and try to solve the problems and the inconsistencies.
Do you foresee any collaborations coming out of this?
I hope so. I mean, I've definitely seen some really interesting work in the prostate cancer field and the resources available with the rapid autopsy programs at University of Washington that are very, very rare. If anything, there are maybe two or three in the whole nation. And that's something that an investigator like myself in Berkeley does not have access to unless I collaborate with somebody who is doing that. And I think that there's a lot that we can learn about actually specifying the relevance of these niches in human patients that we can't do otherwise. Mice are only so good. We really are trying to solve a human disease, and thus we need to look in humans.